Did you feel that there was some sort of atonement when you walked away from this career that you had built?
Yeah, you see, I had killed the child inside me. Very vibrant child that loved life, but I killed him by going into a profession that I really didn't like.
Welcome to Jew-ish. You may be familiar with the stereotype of the Jewish doctor or Jewish lawyer, and that's definitely due at least partially to harmful cultural stereotypes like the shyster. But I think it's also a pressure that a lot of descendants of immigrants feel to climb the income and prestige ladder and make good on the opportunities given to them. There was definitely some of that in Robert Markowitz's journey. But ultimately, like so many of us, he discovered that doing what he thought he was supposed to do was making him miserable. So he quit. And like many of us, found himself in his 30s starting over at mom's house. While he was regrouping there, he saw an ad with an opportunity to literally start clowning around. I mean that, he became a party clown. That was the start of a whole new path. Robert was raised what he calls culturally Jewish, which is probably familiar to a lot of us. And even though he didn't realize it until later, he says it's Jewish themes that really interest him. Redemption, for example, or teshuvah in Hebrew, which actually means return. Ultimately, the journey returned him to the things that made him happy, from making kids laugh to making music, both of which he highly recommends, by the way, if you're feeling down and out. And then he started writing. And now he has a novel coming out in the fall. What's it called? Why, Clown Shoes, of course. And what's it about, you ask? Well, it's about a lawyer who has left lawyering. How about that? Write what you know, huh? So here's Robert and his own personal journey of teshuva. Quick side note here, this was a Zoom interview, so please don't judge us for the sound quality. Robert is actually on tour and tough guy to catch up with. So here we go.
Can I just ask you, how old were you when you decided that clowning was a career?
I was about 37.
I don't think in my 30s, I would have still held on to that like childlike love for laughter that I would have even considered that was like a possible career path. Can I ask how that popped into your frame?
Yeah, it's a very simple answer. It's desperation. I was desperately unhappy. I was looking at the New York Times want ads, and all of a sudden I see this ad to become a clown, a party clown, not a highfalutin clown, but a party clown. And I thought, okay, I feel some energy running through my gut. So it was desperation. That's really the simple answer.
So I guess we need a little bit more backstory here. I mean, I think, you know, there's sort of like a, I guess you could call it, you know, like a Jewish stereotype about like becoming a doctor, becoming a lawyer. You carried a really heavy weight of expectation when you decided to pursue that path. And I wonder, do you feel like that started with your parents or did it start before that?
My grandfather was a baker. My father was a teacher, first one to go to college through the GI Bill of Rights. And I felt that I needed to take the immigrant step up from teacher to lawyer. My grandfather was abandoned in a German city at age 12 by his father. And he apprenticed himself to a baker. He came back to Poland. And he married my grandmother, and then he left for America saying he'd send for her. Well, he didn't send for her. She boarded a boat. She hunted the guy down. She found him, and she moved in. He did work 18 hours a day in a walk-in oven, and when he came back at night, she would scrub the dough off his body with a steel brush. So it's not exactly royalty.
That is such a crazy, like, family lore. Our family has a very similar legend. Like, my mom's telling of her Grandpa Jack's story is that essentially my family started in the Ukraine, Russia area as well. But her, on my mom's side, they came through Hungary. And I think, you know, around the time that really fascism and deeply, specifically anti-Semitic fascism was taking hold in Europe, the way my mom tells it is they saw the writing on the wall. And he was married, you know, they were very young, of course, back kind of in the shtetl days, you'd get married 14, 15 years old. And, but her family only had enough money to get her and them to the States. And in my mom's telling, it was, you know, go and I'll find you. And the story is that he walked, starting in Hungary, walking Jewish community to Jewish community, speaking Yiddish to get through, and stowed away on a ship. And then, like, when he revealed himself, worked to earn his passage, ends up in the United States and continues walking across the United States until he finds them in Chicago. They're reunited. He starts a business. He founds a grocery store. And my mom has a hilarious story of, like, somehow he's, like, found out later that he's not an actual citizen, but it's like 50 years later, and he's like a pillar of the community. And he's just like in the courtroom being like, Your Honor, this is me doing my mom doing her Grandpa Jack. Your Honor, I didn't know I was supposed to do anything. I've been here for 50 years. So he was naturalized.
That's got to be a movie.
I know. I've got it.
I mean, can you imagine them walking through Jewish village to Jewish village, stowing away, walking from New York to Chicago? It's 1,000 miles.
It's bananas. I mean, who knows how much of this is accurate, right? Like, but it's a very interestingly similar lore. It's kind of a Jewishy story, but is it really like a story of immigrants generally? I feel like it's kind of the kind of thing you hear a lot from Jewish families, though.
I think so too.
So tell me a little more about your father's relationship with his father. I remember you saying something about the pressure that he put on his son.
Well, my grandfather, who I never met, was not exactly a touchy-feely kind of guy. The stories that I've heard about him is once at Passover, my father, as a very young fellow, wanted to do the four questions, because the youngest child is supposed to do the four questions. And he began to sing them, Man Nishtana Hailaila Hazeh, the whole thing. His father summarily cut him off, ordered that the food be served. And my father was shocked and ran all the way down to the basement of the 6th floor building. Nobody came to get him. My grandfather was a rough character. They once took him up to a Borscht Belt hotel, and he saw the cream in the middle of the table for coffee. He picked it up and he drank the whole thing.
Yeah, you told me something about, I think, your grandfather saying to your father, it's your America.
Oh, yes. Yeah, it's your America. Well, it certainly wasn't his America, working 18 hours a day in those ovens, not really being able to speak English that well. It was my father's America. He had a lot of advantages that his father didn't have, including the GI Bill of Rights, which the World War II version was 4 years. Mm-hmm. And he did NYU in 2.5 years. Why did he pick NYU? Because it was the most expensive college he could find, and they would pay for anything. And then Stanford in California. Why did he pick Stanford? Same reason.
I love it.
And he made it all in 4 years, graduate and undergraduate.
Wow.
And so he had advantages his father didn't have. And I guess I had advantages that my father didn't have. So the idea was that I would ascend the American ladder. I think my mother especially wanted me to be a lawyer. She had put on her college yearbook, her aspiration was lawyer. My father and I were great buddies, and we butted heads sometimes, but I loved him so much. He was a really bigger than life character, very funny, charismatic. My mother and I had a more difficult relationship. I mean, she was extremely dutiful. full, and she really tried to be a great mother, but she was a kind of unhappy person.
Do you think in some ways that your becoming a lawyer was her pushing you to express a dream of hers that she never fulfilled? Or do you think that it really came from that sort of like, you must be a doctor, you must be a lawyer, you must be, you know, that kind of thing?
Yeah, I think in her family, a lawyer was prized. I remember her mother, who I knew well, talking about her brother, and he was the lawyer and he was the great man.
And so was she proud of you when you became a lawyer?
Well, that's the funny thing. I remember after my first criminal trial, I explained it to her blow by blow on the phone, you know, thinking, gosh, she wanted me to do this and she's going to be so proud of me. And at the end, she said, why didn't you become a corporate lawyer?
Oh.
And I thought, ooh, I've just learned something pretty important. It's like that old song, you can't please everyone, so you might as well please yourself.
Mm-hmm.
I started to realize how impossible it is to please other people and that it wasn't going to work.
Yeah. And that it was like never, it was just never going to be enough.
Yeah. You know, it was hard to get away from lawyering. And the reason why is I kept on telling myself, well, I've invested this amount of money, you know, this amount of money and time. And how can I leave something I've spent 10 years doing? And then the other years would accumulate.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I had had a happy childhood, Hannah. And I knew what it was like to be happy. And I knew that I wasn't happy. And I thought, anything's better than this. So I just kind of jumped off the train.
Wow. And what did you do first?
I went to Mexico.
Many a life has been improved by randomly going to Mexico. I think that that's...
Well, one funny story about Mexico is that when I left, I didn't really keep in touch with my mom. And I had been traveling 10 days. This is before cell phones. And all of a sudden, I'm in a place called San Miguel de Allende in the Guanajuato mountains. And somebody comes over to me and pats me on the shoulder and says, I saw you on TV last night. My mom had put out a Mexican ad on TV to see where I was.
Oh, no, like a missing person thing?
Yes.
You gotta call your mother. Did you call your mother?
I called my mother.
Oh, that is classic. That is so funny. It reminds me of another like weirdly parallel story from my mom. She was in Cyprus when Turkey invaded in 1974. And the Brits were very expeditious at evacuating people, and kind of the Americans were not doing much, but they were in what had been historically a mixed village called Dali. And they managed to get themselves on one of the evacuation convoys with the British. But of course, you know, bombs are falling and, you know, there was like a DMZ being established. So it was just chaos. And they managed to get themselves out. They all end up, you know, holed up at the British embassy. And it's like days and days go by. And, you know, there's no way to get in touch with anyone. They're, you know, waited, I think, a couple of days even before they could get any food or water. It was a true war zone. And at some point, somebody comes into the room of Americans and says, you know, Pam Gaber, is there a Pam Gaber here? And she's like, I'm Pam Gaber. And they say, your father's on the phone. You know, where's my daughter? And he like worked all his channels and he managed to find out where they were holed up and got her on.
The ingenuity of a Jewish parent.
It's just ridiculous. I love it. Okay, so you recovered your childlike spirit while you were in Mexico, I'm sure.
Yeah, I did. And I kind of dug deep into some spiritual things. My father had died by this time, and he was very secular guy. And out of respect for him, I never really delved into spirituality very much. But in Mexico, I did. And that helped me do something I had never done before. I started to realize that I determined my life by my beliefs, and that the way I appeared in the world could come from a much deeper place in me than it was coming from so far.
That's fascinating. And so the path from Mexico to becoming a clown was somewhat linear, right? But it leads through mom's house.
Yeah, it leads through being 37 years old and landing at mom's. I spent all my money in Mexico. I was broke.
Like you do.
Yeah, like you do. I was broke, and you know, Mexico did open my eyes, but I was broke, depressed, kind of friendless, lost all my friends, and living at mom's. It's about as low as you can get.
Is that when you saw the ad?
Yes.
For clowning?
That's where I saw the ad. And I followed up on it, and I started to feel something. I decided that being a clown wasn't quite right, that I was going to work with kids, but as a musician instead of a clown. But I wasn't very good at the beginning, Hannah.
How'd you get there?
In fact, you know, once at the very beginning, I was planning a tour, and I went up to a West Hartford, Connecticut, and there was this librarian who was very nice to me. She invited five of her librarian friends. They all sat down. They were going to listen to me. They were all going to hire me if they liked me. Nobody made eye contact with me after that performance.
Oh.
Because, Hannah, I sucked.
Oh, no.
And I was thinking, I left being a lawyer, and I'm terrible at this.
Well, obviously you didn't leave it at that.
No, I didn't. In fact, not too many years later, I was making $425 an appearance, appearing at Pottery Barn kids stores up and down the East Coast. So I got good, but it took a while.
And so why did you stick with it? I mean, I think so many of us would have just become discouraged and walked away.
I guess maybe I'm stubborn. I was sort of a natural with kids, and I love spontaneity. I've always loved it. In fact, what I most love about being in front of an audience of children is that I just feel them out, and I don't even know which way I'm going to go. So, yeah, I had a sense that I could do this. And sometimes it's crazy. Like, I had a sense that I could write the novel that I've written, Clown Shoes. Mm-hmm. But it took me 10 years or so to develop that into a reality. So sometimes your sense takes a while, and that happens. But yeah, I had a sense that I could do it. And it went from there, where I retired my clown suit, picked up a guitar, and kept on going. I had become a pretty successful children's entertainer. And then I did find something that I couldn't do, which is that I owned a bricks and mortar party and classes center in Wilton, Connecticut, which is a really upscale community.
That must have been daunting and dispiriting, and you're trying to run this business. And that was it about that time that you started writing?
Yeah, I tend to do things when my ego is really challenged, and it was when I was having trouble with this business. And so I started to write to get a sense of myself, because I was losing that sense. And there's a little basement room that we have, and I'd burrow in there and write.
Were you considering leaving clowning, or was it a way, were you starting to write to like process, do you think, or to cope? Were you thinking about going in a different direction, or was it just something that you were trying to layer on to deepen your understanding of what might be coming for you?
I think you do a lot of things to cope. And then if you distill it enough, it might turn out to be beautiful. But at the beginning, it's to cope.
And so were you writing primarily about your experience, you know, transitioning, for example, from your family's expectations to becoming a clown?
No, at that time, I had a 3-year-old daughter. Mm. She's now 20. And I started writing vignettes about her. That's how I started writing. I thought she was very interesting to me. She was fascinating. And it was just also interesting how a young child starts to layer on a self-concept. Mm. You know, they start out basically without a self-concept, and then they start thinking, oh, I like purple and I don't like carrots. And so that kind of stuff was fascinating to me. And I started to write about her.
Yeah. Does she show up in clown shoes?
Well, I think that a writer does need to draw from what he knows. I knew her personality, so I had something to work with.
Hmm. So who else shows up in clown shoes? Tell me about how that story
This is a secret.
I won't tell anyone.
My mother's father, who's an old guy, he's like 92, doesn't take any drugs at all.
Wow.
And he's originally Irish, so he talks with an Irish board. It's like, Linda, I'm your father. He's in it, and I'm waiting for the other shoe to drop when they're going to say, how dare you write about him? But it hasn't happened yet. Maybe they haven't read Clown Shoes yet.
I was just going to say, oh, I hate to suggest it, but maybe they haven't read it. So how did your family react to the book? Are they excited? I don't know. I hope your mom is still around. Is she proud of you finally? Like,
he isn't. She lived to 87, so she lived a long time, but she died in 2017.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah. But I've gotten a lot of kudos about Clown Shoes, and you know, I'm very satisfied with the results of the book. I put everything into it that I had, and it's an interesting story. I highly fictionalized it, but the emotions are there.
The story is a fictionalization of your emotions about leaving the law. Is that about right?
Yeah. Well, let's take leaving the law. I left the law because of burndown, and I was probably burned out because I wasn't temperamentally suited for the law.
Hmm.
Is that interesting? No. So why does my protagonist leave? He leaves because he's represented a woman who is a child abuser, and he helps acquit her from the charge of child abuse. And then later, she murders the child. None of this takes place in any scene. It's all backstory. So you're not going to read about that.
Oh, good. But, thanks for the heads up.
But it is a great inciting incident because it gets the ball rolling. Not only does it propel him out of the law, but it sets up what's called a redemption arc where he has to atone. That's very Jewish.
It's very Jewish.
He has to atone for what he perceives as his part in the tragedy.
Yeah. And so did you feel that there was some sort of atonement when you walked away from this career that you had built?
Yeah, you see, what happened with me was all on the inner sphere. Is it interesting to read about the inner sphere? No. So what had I done? I had killed the child inside me, very vibrant child that loved life, but I killed him by going into a profession that I really didn't like. Mm. So in the book, he has a part in the murder of a real child, even though he's not really guilty. He just acquitted the mom from something much less serious. So then he has to help another child, which the opportunity to do that comes up in the book. So that's symbolic to my resurrection as a feeling person with lots of energy, resurrecting my child. But it all happens on the outer sphere in the book, which is much more interesting. Characters.
That's a fascinating analogy to build. Do you feel that you accomplished that atonement? Do you feel that you repaired the damage that you did to your inner child?
Absolutely. In fact, I do feel that this was my path. That my path was to become almost totally numb, you know, like Pink Floyd says, comfortably numb, become almost totally numb and then come alive again. And the first things that did it was children and music. I recommend children and music. But then it became more of an inner path.
Yeah. And I'm curious, you know, we talked about atonement sort of showing up as a bit of a Jewish, very Jewish central theme. And we talked about sort of, you know, the pressure from mom and like succeed and, you know, the pressure from the other side of the family to like capitalize off of the opportunities that you've been given. Do you feel like you said your dad wasn't religious, but like a lot of Jewish people don't identify as religious, especially in the US. I wonder, do you feel that Jewishness shows up for you in any way here? Or is it just sort of more of a, like a thing that is true in your family lore?
I don't think I can escape it. I'll be honest, Hannah, and say that when I was sent to Sunday school, that in Reform Judaism, they call it Sunday school. The first thing I remember at, I don't know, 7 years old, 8 years old, is they showed us a film of the Holocaust. You know, piles of bones, piles of hair. And I'll be honest, Han, I said, I don't want anything to do with these people, you know, but the truth is I'm Jewish. The themes that that interest me are Jewish, like take clown shoes. I'd say coming back to life, you know, the symbolism of the flame that burned. The flame that wouldn't go out, which is a very Jewish symbol.
Ner Tamid.
The soul that might be shrouded, but can be resuscitated.
I mean, it sort of is the entire central theme, right? Same thing with Moses, where he literally didn't even know that he was a Hebrew, and his Jewish soul was revealed to him through the burning bush. Again, a manifestation of the eternal flame, you could say. I mean, that's really fascinating. I never really thought about that as a central theme, but it very much is.
Yeah, that's interesting, because this whole motif of a huge sinner, so to speak, kind of correcting his way, I think is a Jewish theme. And, you know, of course, even Christian stories, you know, the original Christians were, of course, Jews. So, yes, I think that clown shoes is very much in those vein. And that is a Jewish theme. I didn't think my father was very Jewish. And I once said to one of his friends, my father's not very Jewish. And she said, your father's the most Jewish man I know.
How so?
I don't know. I think it was his humanity. That's what I would say. A certain type of humanity that you could call Jewish.
Oh. Say more about that. I'd love to know what that means to you.
Well, I mean, I could talk about my father, who is very special to me. When you were alone with my father and he was listening to you, you felt like you were the only person in the whole world, that you were totally encompassed by his attention. I never doubted my father's love for a second. And I don't know, I just idolized him.
Well, thank you so much for this, and congratulations on Clown Shoes. Where can people find it?
Well, the easiest place to find it is Amazon.com. And if you search for Amazon, clown shoes, Robert Markowitz. You will definitely find it.
Sounds great. Thank you so much. And, you know, keep me posted.
Thank you, Hannah. I appreciate this.
Thanks for listening to Jew-ish. If you like what you hear, please give us a follow. And don't forget to tell a friend who might be a little Jew curious. It really is the best way to help people find us. Also, make sure you check out the show notes for a glossary of terms you might have heard in this week's episode. Jew-ish is a Say More production.